It's the Mike Tech Show, show number 445. This show is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Mike Smith. Thank you very much for downloading and subscribing to the show. Please visit the main website at miketechshow.com. You can email me questions and suggestions for future show topics. My email address is miketechshow@gmail.com. Leave me a voicemail message. The phone number is 240-949-2450, and that's Mike Tech Show, all one word, on Skype. Follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/Mike Tech Show. Follow me on Facebook, send me a friend request, facebook.com/Mike Tech Show. And of course, please check out the wiki at MTSWiki, that's wiki.com. There you will find links to all of the previous shows, links to the audio, the show notes. Great resource for going back and catching up on all of my shows. I have, again, a jam-packed show. First and foremost, Combo Fix is now fixed. There was an infection within Combo Fix, which is one of our favorite utilities to clean infections when you are infected. And there was an infection within there that we announced on last week's show. It is now fixed. It's safe to download. But just keep in mind and beware, these utilities that we use, hey, look at this, they can get compromised. So always use caution, and especially Combo Fix. It's a utility that I only pull out when I absolutely know that the system is infected. And then I run it in safe mode. A tip that was sent in to us that I'm going to repeat from Tech Vets this week, well, something I didn't realize, you can run Combo Fix from a safe mode command prompt. So that's another great tip, eliminating an infection from a system. I have lots of stories in the trenches that I'm going to discuss, stack of email, and some great tips and some questions. So before we get started, you want a faster internet for your website, right? You want your websites to load quicker, and you want to make sure that if your DNS provider goes down, that you have a secondary route to your website. That is where dyn.com comes in. With outsourced DNS, you can make sure people can get to your websites at all times. With managed DNS, you can even connect items like your webcams or your DVR to a private channel that you can pull from at any time. For businesses, email delivery is critical. If your business relies on that contact list of yours, then Dyn's email solutions can get your message to clients and customers. You can go to dyn.com and check out for faster internet by using the Dyn for DNS. And if you go to dyn.com/podcast30, and fill out the contact form, and you can start shopping right away. And remember to use the promo code PODCAST30 to get a 30% discount on their fabulous services. So check them out. That's dyn.com. I want to talk about a client that I visited on Wednesday. That was yesterday. And how I obtained this client, you need to listen to Tuesday night's Tech Vets. So if you listen to the last Tech Vets show, you'll find out how I got this client. So I'm not going to repeat that. So now I'm at the client, and it's a delicatessen over in New Jersey. And I'm visiting there for the first time, where I had met the partner of this deli. Now, he wasn't there on site, but he already prepped the people managing the deli that I was going to be there. And the main purpose was to, get a lay of the land for their shop and make sure that I transferred all the data from this old PC to a brand new laptop that was still in the box. And they said they bought it a couple months ago and they've had no time to open it up because, of course, the Christmas holidays and then the Super Bowl, they've been just so busy. So I get in, meet everybody. They take me to the little office and I start my FABS auto backup for tech to start backing up all the data and the profile information. And while I got that going, I pull out my knife to open up the FedEx box. It's a Toshiba satellite laptop. Nice. Open the box, get the power cord out. I now open the lid of the laptop and the laptop is cracked. And I mean the cracks were big and deep going across the entire screen. This laptop was crushed. And I mean big cracks in the screen. I, of course, I'm alone when I open this up. I go get the owner. I said, her name was Diane. I said, Diane, come here. You got to look at this. I just opened it. It's cracked. They bought the laptop at the end of November, and it sat until February 6th. It was delivered on December 6th. We're talking 60 days old. What do you do? We call Toshiba, and it was bought from Toshiba Direct right online. Man, did we get the runaround. One phone number. Then they tell us, no, you got to go to... We finally get to someone that says, well, we only have a 15-day return policy, a 15-day warranty. Really? 15 days? Have you ever heard of a 15-day warranty? So here's how we left it. I couldn't believe that it was just 15 days. The person who really purchased it was not there, the other partner. So I had a great discussion with him on Wednesday night, last night, and he is going to follow up and escalate it and then try to get them to replace it by saying, look, this is a business, and it's a business that deals, you know, it's a delicate, it's an Italian delicatessen that they were so busy with the holidays and then with all the Super Bowl orders and everything, they had no time to address getting this laptop set up. And that's why they brought me in this week. So hopefully they kind of throw themselves on the mercy of the court and hopefully someone will take and they will be able to do something here. Taz in the chat, great idea. I don't know what credit card he used, but I know he did. What a tremendous idea. If Toshiba does not make good on this, telling the credit card, that's a fabulous idea. I don't know how the end of this story is going because I go through tolls and gas and mileage to drive over there and spend 2 hours on site. And of course, there's no way I could leave an invoice and even charge them for anything. We didn't accomplish anything. So I know I'm going to get a lot of return work. I know they do need a new system. However, whether they get a new computer, whether it's the Toshiba is replaced or I told them, look, I'll help them get a new desktop because they really need a desktop, not a laptop, after I kind of evaluated the situation. I know they'll be getting a new computer. I'll be setting them up, and I know this will be a client for life. But what's the lesson here? You can't let anything sit. And I've done this and I've been lucky where I've let a monitor sit in a box for a few months because I didn't need it right away and then open it up. You have to open up the product, plug it in. You gotta guarantee that it boots up, that it starts up, that it's working, or you're going to be in a situation where you can't return it. And that's unfortunate. I buy things sometimes where I just sit them on a shelf as possible replacement parts or possible that a client might need down the road. I have lots of items that I have not tested. So you have to inspect everything. Some of you remember the TV that I purchased for my son, and it was a 40-inch screen, that I got from Newegg, and they were very, very helpful because it was cracked on delivery. And I knew that was going to be cracked because you could tell by the box. The box was totally destroyed. And I knew when we were opening this up, I was like, there's no way the TV could have survived. Not with the gashes and the box. Now, this box looked good. It was the pressure that was on. Shame on Toshiba for the way they sold it. That laptop should have been surrounded in bubble wrap or peanuts or that inflated plastic. It should have been around that item. This also was FedEx. I'm hoping that Toshiba will be able to make good because they can go after FedEx for a replacement. It's insured. The problem is there's a time limit for how long for when you can file claims. I'll follow up with everybody. I'll let you know how we make out. Now, last Friday, I had a brand new system with a dual video. It was a Dell Optiplex 990 with two real nice 22-inch monitors. I'm setting it up, and I can't get any video. I was like, I can't believe this. I popped the video card out, and with one monitor, with the onboard VGA video, I get video. Okay, so I know there's video. I unplug that, put the card back in, nothing from either monitor. Nothing. I got a dead video card in a brand new Dell computer. Now, luckily, I go to my car. I have a spare video card that I could pop in. I've had that card for maybe a year that I've not had to use. And boy, it came in handy on Friday. And I popped it in, working beautiful. Now I'm dealing with the return for Dell. I have not even had a chance to call them. I'm actually, my son Ryan tomorrow has time, and I'm setting him up to sit with all the information and the tag number and the order number and everything from Dell, and have him hopefully beg for Dell to replace that card, because I really want that card now to be my new replacement. But I'll tell you what I'm doing with that card when I get it. I'm popping that into a computer and testing it out before I rebox it and have it as a spare. So I'm going to test that out, because the worst thing to have is that spare, and now that spare doesn't work. Anything I see that I have for some spare equipment, I'm going to test and put it in a computer and just make sure that it works, because that would be horrible. I get another situation with a dead on arrival part, and then here my replacement part doesn't work. I just got to make sure that everything's working. Lots of great lessons here. Last night, I am on my client's Small Business Server 2008. And during the day, throughout the day, they were complaining twice of inbound email not reaching there. They sent it from a different email address, and it was getting rejected with an error, no disk space. From the sending email provider, it came with the error code. I searched the error code, and I looked, and it was like, wow, they had 5 gig of space. But I noticed they must have been sending a bunch of big emails back and forth, because the space fluctuated. And when you are on Small Business Server, you with Exchange Server running, you cannot drop below 4 gig. I have squeezed every last megabyte that I could out of everything that you can delete. But there's always room to delete more. So I'm on the phone with Winston Wolf last night, and we're both searching how to handle when I ran tree size, the free version. It let me know where the space was being consumed, and one of the files that was huge is dataservicecomponents.log. That single file was 15 gig. That's right. It was a 15 gig file. So the trick is, how do you get rid of it? And can you get rid of it? So a link that I have here from a TechNet article tells us how to do this. All you have to do is stop the SBS manager service, and you can delete that file And when you start the service up, it recreates the file. Getting rid of that, it's a file that I really did not need. I don't need that log. I have moved everything that you could possibly move. WSUS, I moved all the Exchange. Lots of things that are traditional ways of conserving space on small business server. I went through all those. So the next link I'm going to have here is the Windows Server Essentials and Small Business Server blog. And it's recovering disk space on the C drive for Small Business Server 2008. And there's lots of tips in there. Now, most of them I have done, but there are still a couple that I'm going to implement to just get some more space back. So now everything's going well. And one of the things you have to be worried about, when you start running low on space on an Exchange server, services shut down. So don't forget to check on the different services. I restarted the information store service. Also, the anti-spam service stopped, so I had to start that. So there were a few services that I had to make sure were started, and then everything's fine. Clients happy, happy. And I got a lot of space. And, hopefully what I'm sharing here, if you're in this situation, you'll be able to get some space back. So giving all this space issues with Small Business Server, I now understand what Dell has implemented when you order a Dell server with Small Business Server 2011. You only have one option for the operating system drive, and that's maximum partition. So if you have 2 terabytes of space, your C drive will be 2 terabytes. It will consume maximum space. If you have 4 or 5 terabytes, you can pick the option to use the GPT, the GUI, extension for the drive partition, so it can be greater than 2 terabytes. You can select that. And I noticed in my selection, if when I'm ordering a server, the partition options. And now this makes sense. And now I understand why Dell insists upon maximum partition size. So this way, you're not going to run out of space on the C drive. I mean, I really like to the old days, I would like to have, back in the days of NT4, I remember, a 4 gig partition was all you could have. And then I remember would have like 100 gig and then for the OS and then the rest. Well, that's changed now for Small Business Server. And of course, Small Business Server is dead. That's a whole nother discussion. Where do we go from here? And Winston and I were talking about that. And maybe later I'll get him on the show, or we'll do a special small business show, which, what do we do? Microsoft has abandoned Small Business Server and going forward. I mean, they're still supporting Small Business Server 2011. Don't get me wrong, but they're not going any further. So where do we go and what do we do? And we're going to talk about those options, because I think, and anybody that's in our situation consulting, you're going to be dealing with this. This is from Martin. And it's about show 439. I have a comment and a question about your use of Small Business Server 2011. I am a Microsoft Small Business Consultant certified in SBS 2003, 2008, and 2011. I often run multiple domain controllers in all of the aforementioned versions with no problems. The SBS box must hold all 5 FSMO roles, but other than that, there is no problem. My comment about your choice of SBS 2011 and turning off the Exchange server bothers me. I think you should have selected Small Business Server 2012 Essentials, which gives you all of the same features without on-premises Exchange. Now, see, I didn't even realize about that. There is a limit to the number of users, so I don't know if that played part in your decision. It actually didn't. And he says, great podcast, Marty. I don't think they call it Small Business Server 2012. I just thought it was Server 2012 Essentials. And that's why I kind of blew that off, because I thought it was too small. And you're right. I don't know if I'm past the number of users for where I implemented it. But I didn't see anything wrong with running SBS 2011 and just shutting off Exchange. It was inexpensive. It got me everything that I wanted. And it got me SQL and some of the other essential services that I want on the server. I am going to look further into 2012 Essentials, because maybe this is a good option for us, for clients with that really, they only needed Small Business Server. Okay, this is from David, and it's about show 444 and antivirus. I enjoyed your show. The discussion about using NAS for small networks and businesses was very helpful. I wondered, though, about your recommendation about antivirus. First of all, avcomparatives.org, you've got to include the hyphen in the URL, does excellent and thorough research on the effectiveness of all the top antivirus packages using both definitions and heuristic tests. While we may have our favorites, especially when considering configurations and maintenance, we also have to consider the actual numbers. For instance, their tests show that Microsoft Security Essentials should not be trusted. There's a reason why it has such a low impact on system performance. For my clients, the corporate reviews at av-comparatives.org helped me decide to use ESET Endpoint Antivirus in business environments and Norton on standalone machines. While Malwarebytes certainly is useful software, I often use it to help clean up infected machines. It does not replace antivirus software. They even say so on their website. In addition, good antivirus software should include the protection capabilities included in Malwarebytes. Maybe we'll be able to stop using antivirus software someday, but probably not in our lifetimes. I just cleaned a new customer's computers whose son put an infected flash drive in it. He also believed that antivirus software was unnecessary and that a simpler anti-malware program would do. Thanks for another great show. David, thank you. And everybody's got their opinion. Carrie and I actually dived into this topic and talked about it. And when they're running those tests, that's at that moment in time. I tell you, I'll still stand behind my opinion, and I don't believe the money that you pay for the bloated antivirus programs that suck the life out of your CPU, I don't think it's worth it based on the layer of protections that I've now positioned most of my small business clients, which is Microsoft Security Essentials, Malwarebytes Pro, and Web of Trust when they're searching. Do you know with that combination, I have not had anybody reinfect it? So until I see evidence in front of me where there are infections after I've deployed all three of those solutions for the browser, solutions for the malware, and Microsoft Security Essentials, I'm going to be sticking with it. I understand your ESET. Yes, that is a great program that has had great reviews. I'm just not there yet. Until I can see evidence within my clients, I'm going to continue to recommend this. But I thank you for your advice. This is from Jerry, and he's actually in the chat tonight, and it's about a program called Reprofiler. I know I'm a few shows behind, but this is something you were asking about in the show I listened to earlier today. And the program for moving profiles, domain profile migration. I've used Reprofiler for probably around 7 or 8 years for any profile issues that come up. I've used this tool to transfer domain profiles to local profiles after switching our server to terminal server only. It can also transfer to domain profiles. I've been using version 0.4, but it looks like they have continued development and just released version 1 in November of 2012, which is compatible with Windows 8 profiles. That's awesome. Other profile manipulation, computer migration. As an alternative to FABs or backrecs, you could copy the user's profile from a computer migration or Windows reinstall and use Reprofiler to set the old profile folder to their user on the new Windows installation. I haven't tried this, but I will be as soon as I have the opportunity. I would assume you would need to get everything installed first to make sure the installation doesn't overwrite the app data. And you can also restore the lost profile data. I've used this program primarily to reattach a user's data to their profile if it somehow gets damaged on or reset. Jerry, thank you so much for this utility. And of course, it will be in the show notes, the link to this program. And that's iwr.cc/reprofiler. Questions on business. And this is from Shannon. For your business, do you carry any kind of liability insurance? For your technical support, do you charge sales tax? I'm starting my business and want to make sure I've got my bases covered. I don't know about the sales tax from state to state on this, but I know I do not have to charge sales tax for consulting here in Pennsylvania. So I don't charge sales tax for the consulting, but I absolutely have liability insurance. And that is because there was a project, and I was so glad I had the insurance. I was not allowed in the building unless I could show proof of my business insurance. And this was from the company that manages the facility for all of the different tenants. And we were going in there to do the rewiring. And of course, the wiring contractor needed to have his insurance. And I had to show proof of my insurance for doing my work. Also, it covers any kind of a loss in addition to my home from holding equipment here. Since I'm selling servers and different equipment, at any time I can have lots of equipment that I'm transporting in the car or transport or in my house. So if there was any kind of a problem, it would cover this equipment. Also, God forbid anything happened with a client and their data and I was being sued, I am covered up to a pretty large number if there was any kind of a lawsuit. So this is called business insurance or business liability. You could talk to any insurance carrier that writes homeowners and auto insurance, and they would be able to advise you appropriately based on your business and the size of your business and what you're doing. They'll have lots of questions for you. And based on that, they will structure a policy that will work. Highly recommend it if you're doing what we do. This is a question that just came in today from Eric. Mike, is it safe to delete the Windows.old folder after upgrading from Windows XP to 7? It is taking up about 30 gig on my drive, and I'd like to trash it. I have heard conflicting information about removing it. Any advice? Thanks. My opinion is if Windows 7, which, by the way, I cannot believe you did an in-place upgrade of XP to Windows 7. But since you did, and it was successful, if you're happy and Windows 7 is running perfectly, I would delete it. And my recommendation is delete the .old folder. But you may not be able to boot into it. So I don't know if your boot manager would still allow you to possibly boot into XP into that Windows.old directory. I don't know how the in-place upgrade went exactly, but I believe you can get rid of it. And that's my opinion. But I'll tell you what, that is a lot of space, and you might want to get a big external drive. It's going to take a lot of time. The best bet would be back that up. Yes, it's 30 gig. It's going to take a long time. Copy it to an external drive just in case before you blow it away. And so now you've hedged your bets, and If something goes wrong and you need it, hey, you didn't cripple your system. If you're real paranoid, back it up to just by copying it to an external drive, then go ahead and blow it away and then see what happens. So hopefully that is good advice. Final email. And this came in today. So we're really caught up on email here. Universal plug and play check. Hi, Mike. Can you remind your listeners to check their routers for the universal plug and play option? Over 81 million routers have universal plug and play turned on by default. Gamers will need to leave it on. Go to grc.com. This is the site maintained by Steve Gibson, and he has a test under services and shields up. Give it a test. Check it out. Make sure that you don't have that option turned on because, of course, that's a security flaw in having that turned on. Thank you for that advice, Peter. I really appreciate it. I want to thank everybody for using my Amazon links. I really appreciate it. Please continue to use them and share them for all your Amazon purchases. Your price remains the same, but it helps support the Mike Tech Show. Those links are amazon.mikenation.net or miketechshow.com/Amazon. And of course, you can click on the link in the show notes or on the left-hand side of the website. I want to thank everybody for downloading and staying subscribed. We got a huge snowstorm and blizzard hitting the northeast quadrant of the country this weekend. So everybody stay safe, stay warm, and I will be back here next week, same time, same channel. I'll be doing my show on Valentine's Day. Have a great week. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to The Mike Tech Show, a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Please visit techpodcast.com.